this is a pamphlet that our Eternal Life organization has put out. I have an introduction to this pamphlet, and it describes, the title is Instant Homicides Through Contraceptives, written by professional pharmaceutical specialists. Most contraceptives are abortifacients. In other words, contraceptive pills are also abortive pills. And he explains and shows how that's true. And as a consequence, the number of actual abortions in the United States . Surgical abortions are about, as we know, 1.5 million in our country. But the total number of abortions in the United States, he calculates, is 14,320,000 FG year. 14 million. I repeat, this is worth reading. Now, I'm not even sure the exact price. I think it's $1. In any case, what I'd like to do is to pass around. Somebody could pass around a page and just put on top of the blank page, infant homicides through contraceptives. That's one. Then he'll order as many copies. There's no money made. It's strictly what it costs us in Eternal Life to publish this. In other words, in the United States alone, he has close to 15 million abortions every year by using contraceptive pills. In my younger days, when I was in my doctoral studies for a doctorate in biochemistry, for I was taken out of science and put into theology, I analyzed some 30 contraceptives on the market. And all the contraceptives that I analyzed were abortifacients. I know no contraceptive pill that does not kill the fertilized ovum, which for us is a human being. So put your name down if you're interested. This would be number one. He'll order the copies and make them available for as many as want them for our next class. Secondly, this is a lecture that I gave in New York to public school teachers, all the Catholic public school teachers of New York, on moral and spiritual values in public education, the need for reforming our public schools by teaching some, at least some, moral and spiritual values. This again, I happen to be the author of this. I wrote the introduction for this. Then, here's an article which is really a 20-some page pamphlet on the impact of religion on American culture. In other words, the need for religious values in our country. And as you know, everything is being done to remove those moral and spiritual values. In any case, impact of religion on American culture, also by yours truly. I'm not sure I mentioned this. The statement of principles and policy on atheistic education. Did we talk about this in class?
No.
This is a translation from the Russian, which I was involved in. Now, Soviet Russia is now, of course, politically a non-communist country. This, however, was the way the communists for 70 years taught atheism to the children in all their schools. And now 1 billion people in China, as you know, are being indoctrinated in atheism. So it is. Statement of principles and policy of atheistic education in Soviet Russia. And I should say that the Archbishop of Moscow has asked a number of us to form an organization for working toward the conversion of the Russian people. I happen to be on the board of directors and the spiritual advisor to the commission. Over 200 million people, most of whom are starving for the true faith. This at least is what had been done in Soviet Russia, to teach atheism to the children. And as we'll see during class, our public schools in large measure are doing exactly that. They are teaching agnosticism and atheism. Then, I think we refer to this again in a previous class. This is the Jesuit Ordo, and I'm not sure the exact price, but I think it is
$6.
Now this, as some of you already know, is the Ordo, which means the manual for every day of the year, starting on the first Sunday of Advent to the last day of the next ecclesiastical year, which begins, well, on the first Sunday of Advent of this year. It has for each day of the year the feast, exactly whose feast it is, what mass or masses should be said, and then what readings at mass, and the divine office, what divine office should be said, and also all the directives for the liturgy. In any case, I bought some advanced copies, but what I use this for, besides, of course, my directives for mass and divine office, I use the empty space around each day's directives for the readings at mass and the divine office and the feast. I use the empty space for my daily examination of conscience. I use abbreviations, if anybody reads it, you won't be able to decipher. I examine my conscience, and for 40 years since I've had this, 48 years, every single day of the year, I make an examination of conscience, and in my own non-patented hieroglyph, I use abbreviations. What I've done, what I should have done, in other words, it's a good thing to, well, put your examination of conscience into, which I do. Whenever I travel, I always carry this with me. So these are on sale. Again, Jesuit Ordo. I think we already had one, didn't we? Pass around. Take another page, if you wouldn't mind, Jesuit Ordo. And then anybody who's not got one? Has anyone, how many of you got your Jesuit orders yet? Oh. Well, is Paul here? Paul, would you please bring, Peter, I should have told you to bring the orders that we had. Are they back there?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, would somebody pick them up, please? So I have a batch of these ordos, about maybe 12 of them, and same thing, because I got no discount from my own Jesuits. They charged me $6. So. So that's the last item I want to, shall I use the word advertise. And I've been asked to make an announcement regarding the Senate Bill number S-939 regarding partial birth abortion. And in committee now, and the phone number is area 202-0908, 202-0908. And the phone number is 229-3951, 229-3951. For the date of the vote, it may be as soon as Monday, and doctors now, according to this bill, will be legally allowed and encouraged to enter the birth canal and birth a baby to a breech position, slow down the birth process, and then with a machine suck out the brains of the infant prior to birth. And it is to provide, as you know, the brains for certain purposes and use the rest of the human body. This is all part of the bill. Use the rest of the body for, as they say, harvest purposes. There is a ban against this now. In other words, it's not just abortion, understand? But abortion to make money. And among others, as you know, the cosmetic industry. So this will then increase the abortion business, because these babies then will be marketable. And no doubt, the mother who provides her child for this kind of murder will be paid money too. For the House of Representatives, the vote already was passed by the House of Representatives, passed 288-139. Oh, pardon me. House of Representative vote was 288-139, and the bill passed. In other words, continuing the ban, so I'm trying to read what's here and making sense of it. So the vote is whether to continue the ban or not. Am I correct? So to be sure, that contact, in this case, your senator, because the boat is already, then to continue the ban on doing this. And now it's before the Senate. As you realize, abortion now is becoming big business. You should have, all of you, the questions and answers to continue the pro-life catechism. A request that I think I've made before. My plan, of course, is to publish this catechism shortly after we finish class. And consequently, if you do make copies, better I would recommend not making copies except maybe for your friends so as not to multiply. You understand? Copies of this catechism. And I could use some liquid or water, please. As I've also told you, we're not covering everything in class. My expectation is that you will have read. Thank you. My expectation is you will have read from the last question that we finished in our last class to where we begin. And we'll begin on 96, question 96. Who remembers what question we finished in last class?
96.
You say we finished 96?
No, 95.
We finished 95.
95. Okay. In class? Now, how many questions?
Here's today's.
Oh. So, well, where did we finish? In other words,
95.
We finished in 95, eh?
Yes,
and you have received now, what number did you receive? 107?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Can you hold on to this, please? So, then I'm asking you to read, or did ask you to read from, well, we left off 95 up to 106.
Yes.
That makes sense?
Yes, it does.
So we pick up, each class we pick up the question that I'm distributing and then ask you to read between the last class question we've covered up to where we begin today. We begin with 107 today. Okay? Question 107. What is the center of human life? I'm using the language of the Holy Father. The center, the meaning, and the fulfillment of human life consists in giving up his life to God out of love for others. Let me reread that. The center, meaning, and the fulfillment of human life consists in giving up his life to God out of love for others. What are we being asked? What is the highest purpose, the noblest purpose, the most sublime value of human life. The most sublime value of human life is sacrificing this life for others. Now, of course, not everybody is called upon to physically die for another person. But that's what Christ did. And we are told to imitate Christ. Too often, I think, we speak of imitating Christ by imitating him in his practice of virtue during life. That's true. But that is not the fulfillment, the peak, the acme of imitating Christ is in his death. And as we know, if we want to serve others really, sincerely, deeply, fully, it will cost us our lives. So the next question is important. 108. How do we know that the fulfillment of human life is to sacrifice this life for others? We know this from the example and teaching of Jesus Christ. He is the living God who became man precisely that he might be able to sacrifice his human life so that we may have life twice over. A share of the life of God in the eternal vision of the Holy Trinity and the glorified life of our bodies after the last day. As I was dictating this manuscript for a printout, I thought to myself, I just hope that next Sunday's class, that's today, will really, really see what these two questions mean. Where do I begin? How many people realize that the main purpose they have a human life here on earth is to use that life, exhaust this life, wear out this life, spend this life out of love for others? How many times have I been told, Father, you keep working the way you're doing. You keep those hours. You won't last very long. I meet with my doctor in Chicago. The one that's kept me alive for over 20 years. Father, he tells me, you contradict our medical books. He's not bargaining with God. When people are in need, we meet their need, no matter what the cost may be to ourselves. One of my confreres, I don't think I've ever quoted his name in public in my life. I'm even being taped. Brother Frederick Froerk, F-R-O-W-E-R-K. He is now at our Jesuit residence in Clarkston, Michigan. Fred Froerk, as I knew him, years in the past. Married. His wife was having their first baby. And she had the choice. Either kill the baby and save her life, or save the baby, or try to save the baby, and she would die. That's before medicine reached, as you know, the stage of development we're now, with all kinds of scientific means, you can, in most cases, save both lives. This case, both lives could not be saved. She died. And Fred Warwick, shortly after, joined me in the Society of Jesus. We decided he'd be a lay brother. All I can tell you is to take seriously questions 107 and 108. It's to be really, truly, and unqualifyingly a follower of Christ. We, in the laziest nation on earth, we work the least hours. We sleep the most hours. We eat the most food. The wealthiest nation on earth. How we need to hear questions 107 and 108. The noblest purpose of our life on earth is to expend ourselves, use ourselves up out of love for others. The years of writing manuscripts 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning and getting up for 6:30 Mass. Thanks for the opportunity. Now chapter 3. God's holy law. ...109... How is God's gift of life also a commandment of God? And the answer, and what I'm doing, as you know, is synthesizing the Holy Father's words, then adding whatever words of explanation I think would be useful to make the answer clear. The gift of life we possess on earth is meant to be eternal, and again, twice over, in seeing God in heaven through all eternity, and in the reunion of our souls with our bodies after the resurrection. We're not angels, we're human beings. But both levels of life are conditioned. The condition is that we obey the commandments of God by doing His divine will here on earth. And hear it. Doing God's will with our souls, and that means with our bodies and our wills. And doing God's will with our bodies. both our souls and our bodies, faith tells us, will survive. Souls, of course, are alive. The moment our body dies, the soul continues living. And hear it, a conscious existence. One of the worst errors of John Calvin, the genius behind Protestantism, was to deny that the human soul, after the body dies, has a conscious existence. That's a lie. Human soul has a conscious existence. The moment the body dies. But it's one thing to be conscious and be in heaven, or conscious and be in hell. Our bodies too will rise, but once more, what a difference between those bodies sharing in heavenly beatitude, or sharing, shall I use that verb, experiencing eternal bodily agony. Would you mind closing the door, please? We are meant to stay alive in our souls, regardless. We are meant to stay alive in our bodies, again, regardless. We are eternal beings. Our souls will never die, and our bodies will rise from the dead. But the condition of both soul and body in eternity depends on our behavior here in time. And the longer I live, the more people I tell in God's name, don't count the price you have to pay in this life. It's worth it. It's worth it 1,000, 10,000 times worth the effort, the struggle, the pain, the suffering. Because of the reward that's awaiting us, it's worth it. And the deepest joy, I hope you hear this again, the deepest joy is not a present experience. The deepest joy is the hope of the future experience. Reread the Beatitudes. Take the 8th Beatitude. Blessed, which means made happy by God, are those who suffer persecution, who are calumniated, all kinds of lies told against them for my sake. Rejoice. And Christ tells us to rejoice now, today, on November the 12th, 1995. Rejoice today, but hear the rest of it. Rejoice, because your reward will, get it, will be great in heaven. The prospect of heaven should be, I mean this with my whole heart, the prospect of heaven should mean the deepest source of happiness for us on earth. Our faith is a granite foundation of our hope. And we hope to be happy beyond our wildest dreams. But the prospect of happiness in eternity, I repeat, is conditioned on our willingness, and I have to say it, our willingness to suffer here on earth. Father Brome gave me the privilege of giving the homily on All Souls. Was it All Souls Day?
Yes.
Thanks. To refresh my memory. And Paul, would you remind me to bring copies of that homily? I very seldom do this. But I thought this was so important. I dictated the homily beforehand, then made 100 printouts of the homily for distribution. So we have a copy of the homily. Is there do we have a class this month again?
Next Sunday.
Good. It's still November on purgatory. I told the people then, I'm telling you now, my friends, we've got only one choice. We're all sinners. My dear fellow sinners, good afternoon. We're all sinners. We've got only one choice. Because we've sinned, we must suffer. There's only one option. Either we suffer here or we suffer hereafter. And you start complaining, you're going to suffer more. And the prospect of joy in eternity should be so great. We shouldn't, humanly speaking, of course, we're bothered. You suffer pain, I suffer pain. You feel yours, I feel mine. But who says, I've said so often, who says that pain and joy are incompatible? That's heresy. See, they're incompatible. Number 110, does God want man to be king of the earth? Only the Holy Father could raise these questions. I'm quoting him. Yes. And the words of St. Gregory of Nyssa, quotes, God made man capable of carrying out his rule as king of the earth. Man was created in the image of the one who governs the universe. Everything demonstrates that from the beginning, man's nature was marked by royalty. Man is a king, created to exercise dominion over the world. He was given a likeness to the king of the universe. He is the living image who participates by his dignity and the perfect perfection of the divine archetype, who is God. But these questions, 110, 111, and 112, lead up to you know what? We are to exercise our royalty. And we've got mastery over so much of the world. Now even reaching the moon. How is man to be king of the earth? Man has been called to be fruitful and multiply. God wants children. When I meet a couple that have a large family, I always congratulate them for propagating the faith. Unless you've got children, faith is useless. There's nobody to believe, right? Must first have children, otherwise you cannot propagate the faith. To subdue the earth, be fruitful and multiply, to subdue the earth, and exercise dominion over other lesser creatures. He is to be Lord and ruler, not only over things, but especially over himself. Can man, who has been chosen by God to be ruler over himself, can man be a slave? A slave inside of himself, yes. Either we master our impulses, and there are seven. By now, you should know the memory scheme for the seven capital sins. Remember, places G, pride, lust, anger, covetousness, envy, sloth, and gluttony. We are therefore to be masters exercising lordship. But then, 1:12 is the big question. How is man's lordship, or is man's lordship over human life absolute? No. It is, says the Holy Father, ministerial. It is to be of service, as with ministry means. Ministerium in Latin means dedicated service. It is subject, this mastery or lordship that we have, it is subject to the boundless wisdom and love of God. And what's happening, do I say, what is the de facto situation in a country like ours? Human beings that are meant to be lords, kings even, but they ignore or forget or reject the one ruler to whom they must be subject, and that is God. Every sinner, in the measure of his or her sin, every sinner to that extent rejects the authority, the lordship, the mastery of God over that person's life. And we've got seven powerful drives, and they are powerful. And hear it, and they cannot be controlled by our own will. Impossible. They can only be mastered by the grace of God. John 1:13. How is man to exercise his dominion over human life? You might say, well, how do you expect? Man is to exercise his dominion over human life in accordance with the precepts of the Lord as a gift of grace entrusted to him for his own good and for the preservation of his personal dignity and the pursuit of his happiness. Oh, how well I know, with God's grace, I published some books, but the deepest truths that I know, especially about human nature, I will not only not publish, I won't even speak about. you don't have access to thousands of souls for 48 years in my priesthood without learning a lot about human nature. So when I speak about this, I talk in generic terms for obvious reasons. The deepest error in the modern world is the world's definition.